Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, welcome to Investing Simplified on a very nice morning, actually, in Portland, Oregon. We are the longest-running financial show in Portland that takes calls, that has a financial planner, a attorney, and a CPA. And speaking about CPAs, this morning in the studio, we have Kevin Staggy with the Baker Coastal CPA firm.
Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, Kevin. And Carl's taking another weekend off, and I think he's just getting tired of getting up early Saturday morning.
Yeah, I think it's well deserved. Give him some time, freshen up, come back with some new material. You know.
Yeah, he did offer to call in, but yes. I figured he probably needed the sleep.
That's I think so.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, this show's interactive, and the thing that makes this show, in my opinion, good, is getting calls from you, the listener, so that we can respond to them. Our number here is 503-417-7626, 503-417-7626. And I have been working, Kevin, with the studio to get us a toll-free number so that our listeners who are outside of the Portland area, maybe up in Central Oregon or out on the east on the coast or down in Salem, can call toll-free. So we are working on doing that, and hopefully we'll be able to get that done here shortly this new year. And because I think it's important that you get your questions answered, and we do have a signal that reaches far enough so people can call in. And people over in Washington, same, we get you a toll-free number would be helpful. But again, if you have a question, give us a call at 503-417-7626. And I will make this announcement. I did get an agreement again with Harry Dent and Associates, and Harry Dent or Rodney Johnson will be calling our show the third Saturday of every month for 2014. First call will be on January 18th, 2 weeks from today. We will have them live on the air for a half hour. And listen, this is an opportunity to talk to a world-class economist organization that, you know, we just don't get to hear about in Portland, unless it's on CNBC or CNN or Fox Business or one of those. So this is your opportunity to ask a question that maybe you see these people on TV and you always wonder, why doesn't the news guy ask him this or the news guy ask him that? Well, this is your opportunity to be that person and ask that question. And I think it's a great opportunity. And they're nice guys to talk to, aren't they, Kevin?
They sure are. You know, Harry and Rodney are not short on opinions, and they definitely have an opinion of how things are going to be going over the next, couple years and that sort of thing. And that may be a little different than what we're hearing in the run-of-the-mill news programs. So it's good to get their insight. Information helps you make decisions.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, if you do go to my website, which is pfgwm.com, you can get a link there to Harry Dent's website, and you can also sign up for his free newsletter. And I highly recommend doing that because free is a good price. And you can go there. It's called Survive and Prosper. And you can also go to harrydent.com and sign up for it. You can also see videos there, and we have links to those on my website. Also, I'm going to be launching a new website called AskTheFinancialDoctor.com. We have it actually up and going. We're also going to be starting to pre-sell our book called Investing Simplified that'll be coming out shortly. And there's information there on the book, also about other things going on that you can go and check on. You can also, we have blogs on there, and I have all kinds of things where you can send comments and get questions answered. And the AskTheFinancialDoctor.com is going to be set up to answer your questions, and we'll eventually put out a book from all the questions we receive on the site. And so our on the radio station, some that we've had here, we'll be putting into that book as well. So it'll be a good thing for a reference source for people to look at and say, you know, because the odds are if you have a question, there's probably 10 or 20 people listening that have the same question you got.
10 or 20,000 people listening.
Maybe 10 or 20,000, yeah. Well, I mean listening in the Portland area. So,
okay.
But probably you're right, though, Kevin. There probably is 10 to 20,000 people right here in Portland that have the same concern you do, and maybe even more, because a lot of people think that this is my situation, but there are, in the reality of life, we're all pretty much the same. You know, we all got to pay the IRS. We all got to pay those mortgage payments. We all got to pay those bills. We're all pretty much the same. And so if you have a question or you have a concern, the way I look at these kind of programs, like our program, a talk show where we answer questions for you, you're really being a public servant to help people, because if you have a question, that's going to trigger somebody else who has a question and maybe answer it. So I'm going to jump right into the stock market, because everybody knows we had a really great 2013. And I always tell people, and I'm going to say something here that I put in my book, but that a lot of people, some people are going to like and some people are not going to like, but it's the truth. The only two ways I know, the only three ways I know of people to become very, very successful in life is, number one, is to create your own business and build something yourself and create wealth for yourself that way. Number two would be to buy and sell real estate. Number three would be investing. And you can take those three and you can interchange them. I'm not sure which one's number one, which one's number two, but I believe that starting a business and running a business for yourself is probably number one for creating wealth. Next to that is the stock market and it's real estate. And those three things have been the key cornerstone to financial wealth. And if you're doing any of those three things, most of us buy a house. So we're buying real estate. We got skin in the game. We're in that game. You need to be looking at the other parts of that. Not everybody can go out and start a business. It's not that easy. You got to have an idea. You got to have an idea that's different than everybody else. You got to have a niche, and that's not always easy to find. But I can tell you this: there's a guy that wrote a book called "Ideas Are a Dime a Dozen," but the person that can put them to use is priceless. And that's exactly right. Everybody's got ideas. But if you're the person that could take that idea and make it become a reality, in this great country we live in, you get paid exponentially for that. So that is one way to create wealth. And I think we sometimes forget that in America. When you hear about some of these wealthy people, Bill Gates didn't get wealthy by being a charitable person. He actually became a charitable person because he became wealthy. There is a big difference. And he became wealthy because he took an idea that somebody else created. He took that idea and he took it to the marketplace. And he made it workable and understandable so us uncomputerese type people could use our systems and not have to fight with it every day, but actually be able to use it and make it worthwhile in our business, which created his business. And so if you're able to do something like that, there is untold wealth. So I'm going to talk here about the stock market. The Dow Jones closed Friday yesterday at 16,469.99. It was up 28, but it had been down the day before. The 2 days before, actually, the new year. So where do we stand on the Dow versus the close of 10,907? And people ask me, why do, you know, I've had a couple of people who call me or email me and say, you know, why do you keep bringing up this down market? Why do you keep bringing up the fact that, you know, 10,907, we had a high of 14,164. We're 2,000 points past that high, and you keep talking about that high. Well, the reason I'm talking about that high is because that high was 6 years and 3 months ago. We are only up since that high. We are only up 16.28%. Not 26%, not 47%, not 104%. We're up 16.28. That means an average return of 2.61% per year. Listen, if you're listening to the news, and this goes to all you guys out there that are propagating the news on the business networks, you're all full of crap. They're all talking about how great the market is. The market actually sucks. The market actually, we're in the middle of a long-term bear market, and I'm telling you, this market has not had the gains it should have had. We should be roaring at 10%. For the start of the new century, we are right now running at Dow Jones, we're running at 3.33% per year, and that's back to 12/31/99. The Dow stood at 11,497. We're exactly up 43.25% for the first 13 years of this new new century. And that's an average of 3.33% per year. That's not good. That's not good in any imaginable reality. It's not good. And why are we so dang dumb to believe these guys on TV?
Yeah, you know, I was reading an interesting article regarding what's an acceptable rate of return for like fixed income folks. And right now, if you wanted to get a 5% rate of return, you're having to assume a lot of risk just to get a 5% rate of return on a fixed income. And that just kind of shows you where we're at, and especially interest rates and how ridiculous they are. Right now, but you know, if you want to get a 5% rate of return, you're basically having to invest in junk bonds and take a huge amount of risk. I mean,
you know, Kevin, you said the magic word to me, and what most people in this that I run into, they don't really understand risk and the reward or the penalty for taking that risk, because you know, I have clients who are retired who say, "Geez, you got me in this conservative portfolio, and the market did so well this year." And I'm saying, you know what? Of course they did. Look where they had to come from. They were down. The first 12 years of the new century, they were negative. Of course they had to come back. But do you really want to take that risk? And, I mean, talk about the S&P 500. The S&P 500 closed at 1831. This is the top 500 growth stocks in America, people. This portfolio since 10907 is only up 2.72% per year. And if we go back to 12/31/99, the S&P 500 is up 1.9% per year. That's an index that the previous 80 decades did over 10%. I mean, that's five times what it's doing now. If you don't think we're in a new economy, you just haven't woke up. You know, you need to listen to that guy that was just on before us, because that guy didn't need any caffeine. And some mornings I don't need any caffeine, and this might be one of them. But the fact is, if you don't wake up and look at the market, and I kind of look at it and I say, there's a great opportunity coming. I think one of the greatest opportunities in our lifetime is coming, because I think when reality hits in, and I have to laugh. I took an article here, and Kevin, one of the things I'm going to kind of backtrack here. One of the things that does really, really concern me, and it ought to concern every American, and that is the game the Fed's playing with our lives, with our future, with your kids' future, with your grandkids' future. Gold closed at 12/37/40. Oil closed at 94.31, but I'll tell you what, the 10-year bond rate closed at 3%. You better hang on to your shorts. There was an article, which I really had to kind of laugh. I look at Yahoo Finance, and I took an article by a Ryan Valensky. I think he's from the Wall Street Journal, and he wrote this on Wall. Well, I guess come out of related stories out of Reuters and some of the thing, and it doesn't say here where he's at. But maybe he's with Yahoo. But he's talking about the fact that the Fed's going to start this easing in January, supposedly, and the Fed comes out with a warning that oh man, when we start easing, we're going to have a lot of pain. No kidding. You've been printing funny money for 6 years, and you all of a sudden say to the public, we're going to have a little pain when we shut off printing that funny money. You know, I'd like to have a caller, anybody who believes that we should be writing funny money, printing money we don't have, selling down the future of our kids and grandkids. If you believe that is the right way to go economically, I would like to know one country in the world that that's worked. And please don't call and tell me Japan, because Japan's been in the middle of a 20-year recession. They're on QE8. We're on QE3, heading for QE4, I believe. And you can't tell me that printing money we don't have is the way to go. But anyway, you know, somebody thinks it is. And now they come out and say, you know, Mr. Prosser, who's ahead of the Fed, said, says Wall Street opened higher, but subsequently gains, paired gains after Philadelphia Fed President Charles Prosser said the Fed faced immense challenges now that it had reduced to buying and that it needed to be cognizant of the potential rapid rise in future inflation. Really? They're just finding out about this now after 6 years? What planet do these people live on? And do they believe that you and I are that damn dumb that we're going to read this stuff and say, oh, yeah, they're just realizing it now? I've been saying it on the show for 7 years now that this thing's coming, and it's coming like a freight train, and you better be ready because cash is king. There's going to be a lot of great opportunities, and the government's going to create them for you. So hang on, get ready, and I think we're going to have a fun ride in 2014. We'll take a quick break here, and we'll come back with the tax investigator. We're going to have a fun show, but you know what? To make this show fun and kick off the new year, we need your questions. We need you to give us a question. Whether you agree or disagree, I got big shoulders. I can take it. Give us a call, 503-417-7626, 503-417-7626. 7626. You're listening to Investing Simplified on a wonderful Saturday morning on 970 Freedom. And we are your sixth pillar of financial freedom on Saturday morning, the sixth day.
Price Financial Group, wealth management.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management on the web at pfgwm.com. Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
You're listening to Investing Simplified here, Saturday morning, Portland, Oregon, and we're going to kick right off with the tax investigator with a caller. Bob, are you on the line with a tax question?
Good morning. Wish you a happy and healthy, prosperous new year.
Same to you. Thank you very much.
Okay. I was looking at the new Oregon tax form for this year. And I ran across a subtraction for medical expenses that I'm not familiar with. Apparently, it's a new one. And in looking at it, it looks like it's pretty much geared towards older people on lower income. Are you familiar with that line?
I sure am.
Is that, am I correct so far?
You are correct so far.
Okay. And it looks like the person could use it if they're on, if they don't list itemized deductions. Is that correct?
That is not correct. You do have to itemize for Oregon purposes. You don't have to itemize for federal purposes, but when you put all your itemized together and if it comes out for Oregon, then you would get this.
Okay, so you cannot use that subtraction without itemizing.
That's correct.
Okay, well, that pretty much takes care of my call.
Okay. Well, thank you
very much.
All right, thanks for calling, Bob. And actually, that specific deduction, they have altered it here this year. What it is when you itemize your deductions on your federal tax return, everyone knows you've got this, what is now a 10% haircut for your medical deductions. It was 7.5%. They've raised it to 10%. That's part of to help fund Obamacare. And that haircut that you get is your starting point for your Oregon itemized deductions. Now, Oregon says, hey, if you're over the age of 62, then you actually get all of your medical deductions. And that used to be the rule, both for if one of the spouses was over age 62, you got all of your medical added back into your itemized deductions for both of you. Now they have said you don't get all of it. You only get the spouse's medical that is over the age of 62, and they've also put a cap on it also. So it's been greatly pared back. So that is that. Well, thank you for calling, Bob, and we hope to get more questions, 503-417-7626. And as Chuck said, even if you just have a comment, join the conversation. Now's your chance to step on the airwaves and give your opinion. It's what makes this show good and makes America great when there's various opinions and checks and balances and different ideas. So today on the Tax Investigator, we're actually going to briefly answer a question from a longtime listener who emailed into us over the holidays. And of course, we were drunk with eggnog and summer sausage, and we
speak for yourself.
Okay, and we didn't make it in last week, but this week we did, and had a couple. Walt had a couple questions regarding HSAs, and very good questions, and the devil's in the details in some of these things, Chuck. And he asks a couple very pointed questions. The first question is his HSA administrator has a feature where he is able to turn his medical receipts in electronically to them, and they store it electronically in some form or another. And so they've got this stored as proof that, hey, we took a HSA distribution to pay for these medical expenses, and that documents it. And his question is how long should he keep the paper receipts, even though he has them electronically stored? Now, first off, if you have an electronic copy of receipts, tax returns, records, anything like that, that's as good as the original. Electronic works. So
once you have it electronically, you can just destroy it.
You can. However, the question then becomes, how long can you rely on that company to keep those receipts for you? For example, what if they were to destroy them a year later and the IRS were to audit you 3 years later, which they have that window to do? So the question, that's really the question. So you do need to find out, you know, the stability of the company and how long they are going to keep them, or if you have a way to maybe download your electronic receipts to your own thumb drive or something like that. So that's really the problem there. One thing people might find interesting is how long, you know, can the IRS go back and audit you? And the typical statute is 3 years after the due date of your tax return. So 2013 is going to be due, your 2013 tax return is going to be due April 15th of 2014. So 7 years, I'm sorry, 3 years later is going to take us to 2017 until that audit window has closed. And there's some other exceptions. If you're on extension, it's 3 years from the date that you filed it instead of April 15th, so on and so forth.
Now, hey, Kevin, you know, you brought up the savings plan, the Health Savings Act, or the HSAA is what it's called, I guess.
Health Savings Account.
Yeah. Yes. What is the difference between that and a employer-sponsored healthcare reimbursement?
Okay, like an FSA or a cafeteria plan.
Right.
Very good question. A health savings account is works in conjunction with a high deductible health insurance plan. And so you have to get the insurance. And again, it has a high deductible, so it's usually a cheaper insurance in terms of the monthly premium. And then you or your employer make contributions to the HSA account. And as you have medical expenses, such as your co-pays, and other out-of-pocket expenses, you turn those into your HSA. They make a distribution to you. It's not taxable. The HSA contributions never hit your taxable income, and you get a deduction for making the HSA contribution.
Can anybody do this?
Anybody can do it, yes. There's limitations, like if you're a more than 2% shareholder, so on and so forth. I mean, there's definitely you have to make sure it fits you, but most people are qualified. FSA, a flexible spending arrangement, or a cafeteria plan is a plan that your employer has set up where you just go to them, turn in your medical expense. They pay that medical expense and they reduce your salary by that amount. So basically, you get that deduction instead of going on your Schedule A on your tax return. So that's kind of how
But there are limitations on that too if you're an employer for you being able to participate, right?
As an employee.
Yeah.
As an employee, if they offer it to the firm, I mean, they need to offer it to everybody who qualifies. And there's only up to $2,500 that you can get reimbursed starting this year. That's a cap that Obamacare put on to help fund Obamacare again. That'll become a common theme, I think, as we'll see. So
the so-called Unaffordable Health Care Act.
That's exactly right. And so the last question that Walt had was, and this is a very good question, is so when you are funding your HSA, you can put $3,300 into your HSA account for 2014, and that is a tax deduction for you. Now, some employers make a contribution for you. And in this case, he used the example of $750 the employer is going to put in. Does he get an extra $3,300 to contribute to his HSA, or does he only get to put in the difference? And the answer is you only get to put in the difference.
Yeah,
$3,300 is the max contribution that can go into your account for the year. So very good questions. Devil's in the detail. If you're self-employed or you don't have health insurance, definitely consider an HSA with the new Obamacare rules. It may fit your situation. It may not. One of the things I like about an HSA is that it allows you to accumulate this $3,300 in your account every year. And if you do not use it, if you're young and healthy and this kind of stacks up over the years, that becomes a retirement account once you reach a certain age over 60. That just converts right over into like an IRA, so it's not a bad option for.
But it is taxable. You get to deduct it going in, but you have to pay taxes on it coming out.
That's right. If you don't pull it out for medical purposes.
Okay, but if you pull it out for medical expenses, it's tax free.
That's right.
Okay,
that's
good right. Deal.
Yep, not too bad. So that is our questions on HSAs, and so I think we'll go ahead and take a quick break now, and we can come back and talk about a few other things. We've got some 401k options regarding, hey, you just broke service with an employer, and you've got this 401k. What should you do with it? So I think we'll come back, and we can talk about that at some point.
That sounds great. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll come back with Investing Simplified. Give us a call at 503- 517-7626, 503-417-7626, because what you don't know can hurt you. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We're located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
If I had $1 million.
Well, if you got $1 million, you better give us a phone call because you need to do some tax planning right away. And if you don't have a 401k, you certainly better get one if you're going to get that kind of money, but or some kind of a retirement plan. And Kevin, I know you have some interesting things today to talk about on 401ks and rollovers.
I think so, and I know you're not short of opinions and ideas and insight on such a situation as this, where you have maybe broken service with an employer, maybe it's been a long-time employer, you've got a 401k nest egg with them. What do you do with that? What are some of the things that you need to consider and look at with that account? Do you move it? Do you roll it into a self-directed IRA? Do you move it over to your financial advisor? What do you do? And, you know, I think one of the key aspects to something like this is particularly if you're looking to roll it into a some sort of a managed fund, is who are you rolling that over to? Do they have a fiduciary duty to you, or do they have a duty to the company that they're working for?
Yeah, there's a real conflict right now in the industry going on, and I do address this in my book about the fact that there really is a fiduciary responsibility that when you go to a financial planner, there is a fiduciary responsibility. The question is the advisor's fiduciary responsibility and accountability to you, the investor, or is it to his employer, or is it to FINRA, or is it to his broker-dealer? And that's a very broad statement, but the reality is, his first requirement, if he's a registered securities broker, is to the FINRA regulations. His second one is to his broker dealer, and the third one is to you. So there is a problem, and people that have an employer-employee relationship, it's even more so because they're an employee of the firm. They're actually paid to protect the company's best interests. That can or cannot conflict with you, the investor. And so there is a dilemma going on here. And I personally think that 99% of all the financial advisors always put the client first. I believe that there is, and I'm sure you feel that way about CPAs too. They always put the client first, or at least their intention is to put the client first. And they're not selling them a product or a service to get the highest fee out of them. I think, fortunately, our industry has been weeding those kind of people out, and hopefully we keep doing it because that's not the way it should be. Those people should be out of the industry and shouldn't be allowed to back into it. But there is a problem there, and you need to be aware of it. You need to ask. But I think, Kevin, to me, the biggest thing about leaving a 401k at your employer is, number one, if you have an estate and you have heirs besides your spouse, most 401ks do not allow for the secondary beneficiary to stretch that 401k out like you can an IRA. And one of the biggest problems I see with people that leave their money at the 401k is because they don't understand the ramifications to their heirs. That's the key right there. Do they really understand what's going to happen to that money when their heirs? And you just think about it. You got $500,000 sitting in a 401k, husband and wife, got a couple of kids. They say, oh, well, you know, the costs are low. We're going to leave our money at the 401k. Okay, I've got my husband as the beneficiary. The wife's the one that's leaving the firm. And the kids are the secondary beneficiary, so the kids will just inherit the money if we go anyhow. Here's the big difference. The kids get the husband and wife go out and get in the car wreck, get killed. Now they got two daughters that inherit this money from the 401k. If that 401k doesn't have a stretch provision in it, those heirs can't take the funds and stretch that IRA out over their lifetime. They have to actually cash that fund out and pay the taxes on it. Kevin, what would $500,000, even if you split it $250,000 to two young people who are working, what's that gonna take away from? 40%?
Yeah, you're looking at 35-40%. Very, very significant amount.
Yeah, why would you disinherit your family members? Anybody that I've sat down and talked to that really understands the difference, you don't leave your money at the 401k if you have heirs. Now, if you don't have heirs and you don't care and it's going to a charity or it's going to your church, then I tell people no problem. Leave it there because you don't need to estate plan it. It doesn't really matter. All that matters is how you draw it out. Mm-hmm. But if you have somebody you care about, You better not leave it there.
That's right. You know, I think another very key thing is know the 401k plan document rules. Every 401k is different for the most part. They charge different fees. They have different rules. If you break service, sometimes you have to get that out of there. Other times, they want you to keep it in so that they can keep charging you fees on it. 401ks, I don't think, always have the lowest fees.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
No.
And so it's, know what your plan rules are. One advantage to keeping it in the 401k as opposed to an IRA would be if you needed to take a loan. You can take a loan from your 401k. You can't take it from an IRA. And of course, when you pay your 401k loan back, that interest goes to you and your account. But of course, there's rules associated with that, as we all know.
Yeah, so. And the one thing too, we encounter this all the time. People come in and talk to us. I had a person calling me, and they were going to break service. They broke service. Actually, they came and talked to us afterwards and said, "You know, we got this 401k, and they have a $20,000 loan, and they want to switch. They switched employers already. Well, their employer said, we're going to send you the check."
That's exactly right. Many 401k plans stipulate that when you change if you have an outstanding loan and you change 401ks or you break service, that loan becomes due in full.
Yeah, and it is a taxable event.
Yeah.
In other words, that loan becomes 100% taxable as income in the year that you receive it. And if you're under 59.5, what does that mean?
10% penalty.
Yeah, on top of your normal taxes.
Exactly, federal.
It's brutal.
Exactly. Another thing to consider when you break service, maybe you got laid off. Maybe it was early in the year. Maybe this year you don't expect to get employed very quickly. Maybe the thing to do is to liquidate some of that 401k. Maybe you are in the lowest tax bracket you are going to be in for the foreseeable future. And maybe even if you're under age 59.5, if you have kids and you have deductions that you're not utilizing, pay the 10% penalty. 10% to take say, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 out of that, that's the lowest you're ever going to be taxed, you or your heirs possibly.
Yeah, 10%'s a heck of a deal if you really think about it.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you're over 59 and a half, you may skirt any tax ever. And so, I mean, definitely utilize your tax bracket and your deductions. And do know that the general idea is taxes are going up these next years.
Well, I'm going to give you a perfect example of people setting up their retirement plans correctly. We unfortunately lost, and as we do each year, because I have my average client's probably 80 to 85 years old. So I work with a lot of retired people who want to invest conservatively. We are a conservative investing organization, but we try to make sure that our clients have their estate plan set up and they plan properly. And unfortunately, this couple I've known for about 35, 40 years, been clients of mine, and the one spouse passed away and the other spouse passed away within 30 days, which is a very common thing when people have been married, you know, 60, 65 years. And the great news is that the heirs came in and we were talking about the estate. And one of the good things is because we had their retirement plan set up properly, their IRAs, the heirs have the choice. Now, some of the stuff they've got to take and take the money out and pay taxes on it because beneficiary, you have to do it. And they need to take the taxes anyway because they need money. But they happen to be, one of the heirs happens to be at this point in time self-employed, so they don't know if they have money coming in or they don't. So my advice was to get on the phone, call a tax person. And actually, in this case, I did know the tax person. I have other clients that have that tax person. And I had them call them and find out how much they could take. Well, we knew they were going to have about $24,000 that they were going to have to take no matter what. So they took that. But now that becomes their basis for their taxes. And on the IRAs, we have the stretch provision, so they can start taking the distribution over their lifetime. But little known fact that a lot of people don't understand, if you're under 59 and a half and you set up that beneficiary IRA correctly, you take that distribution every year anytime you want to. If you want to cash that thing out and pay the taxes, you don't pay the 10% penalty. Because it's a beneficiary payment.
Inherited IRA.
That's right. And so we set it up, and I said, look, let's talk to your tax person, and if by we get to the end of the year and you need more money, this IRA becomes like a faucet, and you can either turn it on or you can shut it off. Now, you got to have it a little dripping every year because you got to pay because the government's got to get some money every year.
Required minimum distribution.
Yeah, the required minimum. But at some point, if you want to just turn that thing on and take it out, you take it out and pay the taxes. Big deal. At least you got the money available.
I like that picture, the faucet, the little nipple to just go to every time you need.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great way to plan. You know, the fortunate thing is the parents did the proper planning. They set up the provisions for the stretch IRA, gave their heirs the opportunity to control their own destiny. And I think that's the important thing. You want to make sure if you invest that money that you leave it to your heirs in the best possible position. And I think when you have control over your future, that's the best possible position.
I think so, too. You know, one last thought here is if you are going to a new company, make sure you, again, know the plan document and the rules that the new company has also. Oftentimes, you know, similar to knowing what those rules are, if you are looking to, say, close out your IRA and invest it somewhere, be wary of the proprietary allocations, like the over 50 fund, the over 60 fund, over 70 fund, those type of things. I think you really want to talk with somebody before just choosing those type of allocations. And that's where I think Investing Simplified, we're the ace up your sleeve. Give us a call. We'll even answer it over the phone, or give us an email, and give us the details. We'll help you out on that. I mean, not everybody has investment advisor such as Chuck, who is willing to just up and give you the answers that you need, look over your portfolio, give you some advice. Same thing with the tax investigator. We'll help you with your situation. That's what we're here for.
Well, you know, Kevin, we've talked about this before on the show, but if you have a 401k, we do have a question here. Bob has a question about gifting money. Okay, Bob, are you there?
Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. You got a question about gifting of money?
Yes, I know that you can give $14,000 a year to anybody you want to. Now, what is the tax consequence if you give your kids or, you know, any probably just your family, but like $50,000, even more, maybe a little less, but well out of the realm of the...
Well, Bob, here's a key thing that people don't understand. You can give away one lifetime gift...
Yes.
Of up to $5,125,000.
Yes.
So if you want to give anybody, what you got to do, though, Kevin, and I think you'll back me up on this, because Kevin's the guy I call if one of my clients are doing this, because I got to make sure we do the right forms. But let's say, for example, you want to give your kids $50,000.
Yeah.
That's completely legal, and it's not taxable to them, and you don't pay any gift tax on it.
Okay.
However... Kevin, what does he got to do?
You do have to file a gift tax return reporting the $50,000, reporting specifically the $36,000 that's over the $14,000 limit, and all that does is reduces your gift tax exemption of 5.25. It's actually over 5.25 million.
Yeah, and actually what that means is if your estate is worth less than 5.25 million, you can give away as much as you want.
Yep.
And okay, since you're now, not going to have a federal estate tax, it isn't going to matter.
Yeah. The estate tax will be amended, yeah.
Correct.
Now, if say that there's five gifts or X number of gifts over one, but say there's a couple of hundreds and a couple of fifties, are they each one of them treated separately?
You can aggregate all of your gifts to a person in 1 year and just report the total amount that you gave that person.
Say that again.
You can aggregate your total gifts to a person for a year and just report that $1 amount to that person.
Okay.
Yes.
But do you have to do it per person, or can you do it like, let's say he's got five gifts of $100,000 each.
Yeah.
Then you need to report five separate gifts on your gift tax return. Name, address, social security number of who you gave it to, and the total amount that you gave to that person. And it's a fairly straightforward form, Form 709. Any competent tax person should be able to do that for you.
I thank you very much. That's very, very, yeah, that's very good. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks, Bob, and I hope you do that, because that's one of the best estate planning ideas.
I didn't know if I pulled a skull or some darn dumb stunt, you know.
Well, the thing is, we always say you got a CYA, you got to cover your assets, and you did a smart thing calling us this morning, because now you know you got to file that 709 form.
The accountant said that I did, but I didn't know. I didn't quite understand. You think of a lot of questions you want to ask them after they get off of the phone.
Well, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Good question, Bob. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you a lot.
You bet. Thanks. Yeah, that's a great question, because I get that all the time, and I'm sure you do too, Kevin, because I know I've called and talked to you about it with clients that are giving a gift to a kid. And when you tell them they can give them about any amount they want, it's like, really?
Yeah. And the other thing is maybe this fits Bob's situation. If Bob is married and he's giving the gift to a child that is also married, you can the Bob and his wife can each give $14,000 to the child and to the child's spouse. So now you've got $56,000 that you can give and not even have to file a tax return, a Form 709, a gift tax return. So,
yeah.
So you can definitely aggregate your gifts, and that works fairly good.
Yeah, great question.
Yes.
Well, listen, you know, we talk about one of the best estate planning things you can do, and this is a great time of year to do it, is take a look at what happened in last year, where you're at, looking at the new year, setting up your gifts if you're going to do them this year, and you can get them done because, like Kevin just said, you can technically give, each person can give another person $14,000 a year. And if you're a husband and wife, you can give that person $28,000. And if they're married and you like
them,
the daughter-in-law or son-in-law, and you want to give them a gift, you can give them a gift of $28,000 as well. So that gives you a lot of latitude to give $56,000 a year without filling out any tax forms, without telling anybody about it, because it's nobody else's business but yours. So that's not a bad thing. Well, we're going to take a quick break, come back with Investing Simplified, and finish up the show. If you want to call and ask a question, you got to do it now. It's 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. We got about 10 minutes to go, so we'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
Well, we've got a caller on the line. David's got a question about an IRA. David, are you there?
Yes. How are you today?
Great. How about you?
Perfect. Good. I have an IRA that I rolled over from a PERS account, and I put it into a Scott Trade brokerage thing. But I lost a lot of money right after 2008, and I had to start paying taxes from it. So I'm going to try to make the question simple. When I take money out, I pay the 10% to pay taxes, but then I'm also paying taxes on the money I take out to pay taxes, aren't I?
That's right. Any money that comes out of the IRA account, if you're under 59 and a half or even over 59, you do it. That is a taxable amount that comes out of your IRA.
So it's like a circle tax there, isn't it?
It is. It adds up quick if you're in that scenario. And boy, if you can avoid that, it's good.
Is there any way I can avoid it by just not paying taxes?
Flee to Venezuela? No.
No, you better head for the Cayman Islands, buddy. Yeah, hey. No, you got to pay the taxes. You know, the bad thing is, Kevin, when, David brings up a great point here about if you've rolled your 401k over and you must be under 59 and a half, because if you're taking money out of it, you got to pay income tax plus a 10% penalty.
I was just taking the distribution, and then IRS came after me, and so I took some out to pay them. A tax attorney told me to do that. But then I ended up paying the 10%, and then every other distribution after that was also charged as a 10% penalty.
Why are you taking a distribution, David?
Oh, because I was not working.
Oh, okay, so you weren't taking a distribution, you were taking a withdrawal. Because but you were doing that on a predetermined amount. You didn't have it set up as a set amount of money, did you?
It was a predetermined. The broker set it up through American Funds. The first people that was dealing with American Funds said you could take out this amount every year.
Are you over the age of 50?
60.
60. Boy, oh boy, you may want to have somebody take a look at that, a tax person, because if you're over age of 55 and you're basically taking what amounts to retirement distributions and they're substantially equal, there is a provision to escape the 10% penalty on that.
It's called Regulation 72T. But also it has a double-edged sword, because if you violate it, the whole thing can become taxable.
That's what happened to me.
So that's what happened. You got some bad advice then, and you actually violated the 72T, and it became all taxable.
Yes.
Yeah, and the unfortunate thing is, Kevin, what are the tax losses write-offs in a retirement plan?
None,
yeah. So you got kind of a double whammy put on you.
Hmm. There's no way I can go back and amend those taxes, especially the one right before I was the very last one before I turned 59 and a half. I took out another $40,000 for the government, and then I ended up paying $4,000 for the 10%, and then paying taxes on the $40,000 I gave to the government.
Yep, that sounds about right.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's nothing you can do, because when the IRS calleth and want the money, they don't care about your problems or your regulations. And I don't think there's any regulation in the tax code, Kevin, is there, that exempts you if the IRS is calling for the money?
No. Tune in next week. I've got an idea on that, and I'll see if I can come up with something.
So tune in next week, or can I just make an appointment? Come down.
Or give Kevin a call.
Or give me a call, and we can talk about the details.
What's your number, Kevin?
503-666-5569.
Okay, and you can reach me at 503-253-3000. This is Investing Simplified. It will be out next week. We'll be here next week. And in 2 weeks, we're going to have Harry Dent or Rodney Johnson with us from the Harry Dent & Associates Economist. And we'll be on for the first half hour of the show. Don't miss that show. We're going to be talking about what's going to happen in 2014 and give you a preview into the look of the whole year. We will be back next Saturday. Thank you very much for listening.
Price Financial Group.
Let's